All right, we are back for the next module here, and the last module of the day, talking about Azure Resource Manager and how it relates to the overall application lifecycle management. Now, that being said, there is a lot to cover here, and we'll show you and give you kind of an indication of what that looks like. But we have, we're going to give you kind of a flyby view and give you a couple nuggets of wisdom on how you might connect Resource Manager into your application deployment lifecycle. So first off, we're going to cover a number of different fundamentals. We don't want to assume that you already know what continuous integration is. You may be an ops person watching this and you not know what a build is. I know for developers, this is probably really super basic stuff for you, but I think it's really important that we all kind of are on the same foundation before we start describing some of the more advanced topics that we have here. And then last, we're going to give you a little bit of a section on how you might automate the creation and deprovisioning of different types of environments that utilize the Azure Resource Management templates. So first up, I wanted to give this quick slide on what do we mean when we say application lifecycle management. Extension of that really, I think, is DevOps, where we have developers, operations working closer together throughout the entire lifecycle of an application. These phases that you see here, plan, develop, test, release, monitor, and learn, these are a standard set of things that any organization is going to need to go through when they're developing an app. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't really even matter if you're using anything Microsoft. If you have all open source and nothing Microsoft, you're still going to go through these phases of development. And it's really important that operations and developers work together in a DevOps world throughout all those cycles. If we go to the next phase, I'm going to explain what is a little bit deeper view of that model and that flow, because we have some concepts here that are a little tricky to understand, and this will help you to kind of understand those concepts in a little better way. So of course we've got the people, they've got some kind of workstation. Now, if those people want to collaborate on some application, they're going to need to have some form of source control. Doesn't matter what you want to call it, GitHub or Visual Studio Online or TFS, you're going to need to have a central place to kind of check that code in. For test and build, you're going to need to do some form of tests on your code. You're going to have some form of build to compile the code. And you're going to also, of course, need to deploy the code, imagine that, into some form of environments. Here we list four different environments. This could be different. You could have one, you could have two. But the idea is that you're going to probably have different types of environments where your application is going to live. And last but not least, you want to have some form of monitoring and the ability to learn. This could be things like endpoint monitoring, application performance monitoring, anything that you have to really look at that application as it's running, probably in some form of staging or production mode, to gain insight from that you can, in a DevOps world, pass that information back to the developers to have influence on the overall application lifecycle. So if we take a look at the one last thing on the bottom, of course, there's going to be some form of processes that you're going to follow throughout that. That might be something as simple as, what is the change log? What are the things that are occurring as this application goes on? It could be something where you have a formal ITIL process in place to do change management and whatnot. But across the bottom, that's going to occur. Now, if you look at this, this is a huge list. There's no way I'm going to cover all of this today, especially not in this kind of roughly 30-minute module. What you will see, of course, we've talked a lot about Azure Resource Manager. I'll kind of mention a little bit about Visual Studio Online. We're going to cover PowerShell, and then we'll also cover the automation service today in this module. So really, as you can see, this is this is so much information. I mean, we have a full course on just release management for Visual Studio at MVA. But just to give you some context as far as the scope of this module goes, there's a lot to learn here. So what is, kind of level set here, what is a build? You know, me as an IT guy, when I first started diving more into this DevOps and this world, I was like, build, huh? okay, sure, yeah. I know you got a developer guy, you got to do something with that, right? but really, I mean, it's the basic concept is that it's after the code's compiled, that is your application that you are then going to go and do some form of deployment, right? So it's obviously a very critical concept for everybody to understand. Developers have been doing this for years. I mean, it's like 101 or zero, you know, zero before you even start. You hit compile, you've got to build, right? so there's a number of different ways to kind of make that happen in a way in which, hey, if I want more than one person to collaborate or deploy a build that I know is good, has passed some set of tests, you need to have a way to centralize that and collaborate on that. And there's a few different ways to make that happen. So if we go back to our slides, what you can see is, you know, right, we could of course initiate things from Visual Studio and have that build be deployed in Visual Studio Online. So the build maybe might live in Visual Studio Online that way. You also might have PowerShell fire off something into Visual Studio Online to build and compile that code and host it there. Next up, there's this concept of continuous integration. Now, continuous integration has, you know, I would say there's a looser definition of what we want to call continuous integration, and there's some people that are very strict and have a long list of things that are required to say that you have done continuous integration. Regardless of if you're really on the strict side or you're on the loose side, I would say at a bare minimum, what you're gonna see is that once you check in some source code, that source code is then gonna likely do some form of tests and create a build. So if we look at that, we've checked some source in, and you know, in some definition of the world, you're going to have some tests probably run. But at a bare minimum, you at least have, when you check in the source code, you're going to have that build occur, right? And that's in a nutshell really what continuous integration is. Now, of course, this doesn't do the deployment of the app. But this at least gets you through a phase of development where you can say, ideally, hey, all of us have checked in our code. We've got a stable, like passed a bunch of tests version of our app that we can then theoretically go and deploy. So tying this back to Azure Resource Manager, you know, what are we gonna show you here? This is a little bit overly simplified, so I'm gonna actually draw on this diagram here. I'm gonna show you a demo next. So this is really a visual representation of what I'm gonna show you here shortly. What's really gonna happen here is whoever this is gonna take the build, right, of a known app. This is your app. In my case, it's going to be a web deploy package. And they're going to take that build, and we're going to manually go and copy it over to really like Azure storage account. We'll just call it, you know, that's a little storage symbol, whatever. we're going to copy it to blob storage to be more technically accurate. And then what we're going to do after that is we're going to use our PowerShell console as mentioned here. And then we're going to fire off a template, which here it says resource groups, but this would really be a deployment template. That's going to then, you know, create the website, create the SQL database. And when it goes to create the website after that, as a part of the wrapper, and I'll show you this here in the template, that is going to then go and pull the app from the blob storage to then go and actually configure that website and that SQL database. So effectively, we do run a single PowerShell command that then goes from the template and then deploys all those resources from public storage. So with that, I'm going to show you this visually so you understand what's going on here. Let me, I'll discard my annotation. Well, let's keep them, why not? And let me go to my demo machine. Okay. The first thing I want to explain to you is that you're going to need to upload this package. Now, I'll mention here ways that you can try and automate this, but it's a little beyond our scope of our 30 minutes to get into all of that in great detail. But at a bare minimum, right, for now, just to give you an idea, what I would need to do is go and upload my web deployment package, which I know is kind of a well-known app. right? And in this case, this is my Azure website deployment package, which could happen after a build potentially. So I have that package. What I'm going to do is upload that package into my storage. Now, earlier I didn't show you how to authenticate into Azure. I've already done this. Here you would just, you know, log in, connect to Microsoft Azure. At that point, it's going to give you the ability to look at your different storage accounts and where those are at. In my case here, I've got on the right-hand side, I have a storage account for DevOps demos. And within there, of course, we've got each storage account in Azure is going to have blobs, queues, and tables. Here, I have already uploaded the Fabricam Fiber application. And you'll see where this comes into play in a minute. But you can see here that I've got a URL that is where my template can then go down to pull that app to deploy. If I were to use this tool, and of course you can use any other tool you want to copy stuff to storage. Here I would just choose upload blob and upload it using Visual Studio. Okay, so that's the first step, right? I've got my web deployment package uploaded. I want to then give you a dive into the actual templates that I've created. And this is where things are kind of tying together a lot of the concepts that we've shown. So I've got two different templates here that I'm going to open up inside of Visual Studio. And here, if we scroll down to this list, we are going to see inside of here, I got to keep going down here, it's a large text. Here is the website. So this is let's see, that's the website hosting name. Here we have depends on the website, and if we go into here, there's connection streams to configure the database. That's the database. We also have inside of here an MS Deploy extension for websites. So there you can see this is where the template itself is going to be deploying the actual package application. And when you look at this, you can see it depends upon the SQL Server being there and the website being there already. After it knows that that's there, we've got the ability here within this to show that there is a web deploy package URI that we've defined in our parameters file that we'll use to say, hey, this is where you need to go to deploy the website itself. So to kind of correlate there, that's our web deploy package URI. If we go into our parameters file, this is going to show all of the definitions for whatever it is that we want to deploy. So I'll say Fabricam Fiber ALM 05 is the website name we want to deploy. We'll call it the free for all plan. Why not? We'll deploy it to the East US. We'll deploy a new SQL Server, Fabricam Fiber ALM SQL 03. We'll deploy the SQL Server in the East US, right? We want to probably have our SQL Server next to our website. It's probably a good idea. We'll have our SQL admin login, our SQL database, the edition of SQL we want, the administrator login password, super secret. Make sure you don't dive into that one and log in to this resource that I'm going to delete shortly after. But at the bottom here is the key thing that we're kind of, you know, coming back to this. Why did I upload the deployment package? This is my blob storage URL that I did to upload. And this is how the template's going to know to actually do that deployment. Now, I know a lot of folks have been, you know, asking about, hey, how do I do this with VMs and other things? And, you know, at some point, you'd be able to have some form of extension with PowerShell, you know, so that you could fire off, let's say, a PowerShell script or something else that you might have up there inside your storage account to do that configuration of whatever it is that you want to have. For now, though, we are going to just have this as a website deployment. So let's kind of finish this up. You know, let's show you what a deployment looks like from PowerShell that utilizes in a template file and a template parameter file. So like I mentioned, the template file is the one we just showed you, and then the parameter file is also the second one I showed you to define how we want to deploy it. I want to choose a new group. So let's break this out into two windows here, and let's go ahead and execute this script. So what that's doing now is it's taking the template It validated that the template is good. It then showed that, okay, so we actually already have a SQL name, so I need to go back in and, you know what I don't think I did is in my, yeah, I didn't save. So I didn't save, if you note here, I have my little asterisk deal. I didn't actually save my parameters file. So I'll go ahead and save that. And let's just change the website name to 06 in case that's already deployed. We just changed the SQL name. But I should be able to go back in and execute this again.
Did you save it again?
I did. Save. Thank you. We're also going to have the other thing that's interesting here too, and this is kind of a thing where you have to make your own decision. But if you use this switch here /force, this means that it's going to overwrite kind of whatever's in the existing resource group that's there. So we use this here in this case for this demo. You may or may not want to actually use that inside of your environment. It really is a decision on, do you want to have kind of a single group that you keep updating, or do you want to have the model of, hey, I'm going to put a resource group up there, use it for some time, and delete it and do a different one with a different name. It's really kind of up to you. Okay, let's try this one more time here, because we know the app is not going to work if the SQL's not there. Let's try this out. Okay, deployment's valid. This is going to go then and fire off. We'll come back to show this here in a minute. But while that's going, I want to kind of switch gears here to explain. That's great that you have to go and manually upload the web deploy package, or maybe that's really not so great, right? But you know, what you would ideally want to do in a more advanced scenario, right, is that every time somebody checks in some code, is that you run a build that then takes that known good package of your website and then deploys that automatically into a storage account that the template can then go and use the for deployment, right? So you're not having to, every time there's a new build of your website or your app, you're sitting there manually copying stuff around. Well, there is a script here. If we snap back to my screen, there is a script to enable this. Let me pull this to full screen. This is quite a quite a bit of code here. So again, this is a little bit beyond you know, getting into the nook and crannies of how to do this. But in a nutshell, right, this script would be linked to your continuous integration build definition, and it would be run every single time you do that. And the kind of the key thing to point out here is this factor here. It's going to authenticate to your Azure account, and then it's going to do a deployment of that package up into your Azure storage account. So at the end of the day, when you go to do this deployment, it's going to use this variable. Okay, you're probably getting nauseous now, but I'm pausing to see this URI or for the web deployment package, which is a known variable. So after this, right, you could use this as part of this step, or you could put in even to a parameters file if you wanted to have that variable, so that people know that, you know, on a regular basis you have kind of the latest build, so to speak, of that deployment package itself. So I think, let's see how we're doing on this deployment. It may or may not be done. Okay, we're getting really close. It's doing firewall rules, configuring a SQL Server database. Let's go to the portal and refresh that, because I want you to actually see this Fabricam Fiber app being deployed. Okay, that was our previous one that just failed. And it's definitely going to work here. So maybe we'll just, there we go. It's done. Okay, so there we have it, right? I just deployed not only the infrastructure, but I also deployed the actual website and SQL database all in a single go. If we look at our timing here, we're at, let's see, 12:29:30. If we scroll up to the top, we're at 12:26 or 12:27 basically. So about 2.5 minutes. So the question that I have back to at least, especially the ops folks, hopefully this will give you kind of a wake-up call, like, how long does it take to provision environments for your developers or for folks? When they ask you, hey, I want a new environment, does it take 3 weeks? Does it take a month? does it take longer than 2.5 minutes? Because that's what I just showed you how to do, right? So as an ops guy, this, you know, definitely is a relevant thing for you, especially when using cloud services, for you to be familiar with how to do this concept, so you can really, you know, help your organization move faster with your flow in delivering software. Okay. So let me just go back to actually take a quick look, just so you can see that that application did really, in fact, deploy. I think it was 03. I think 03 was my group, if I'm not mistaken. We'll go to the website. And we'll give that a second to load. We can see we have a database and a website. I'm going to click Browse now. And this takes, again, the first time this deploys, it takes a second to warm up the SQL database and the website. But shortly here, we should see that we have a Fabrikam Fiber website, which has a backend SQL database installed on it. Here we go, homepage. Dum, dum, dum. There we go. There's our website. So with that, let's switch back to the slides now. And I am going to continue on with kind of explanation of some of these topics. So there's another concept I want to point out in that, you know, we've showed you how to connect just now, how to connect your Azure Resource Manager template to the deployment of the app itself. With Azure websites specifically, there is a really handy option that I'm not going to have time to get into depths with demoing today, but it's really nice because you can configure effectively Azure websites and Visual Studio Online to automatically do that continuous integration and continuous deployment. So therefore, you know, as soon as you check in that code to Visual Studio Online, it automatically, Azure detects that, goes and does that deployment for you, and you're not really using Resource Manager at all, but it's at least relevant to know. You know, you might actually use, let's say, Resource Manager to initially do your deployments, perhaps, and then set up this continuous integration and deployment scenario after the fact. I don't know. Really, there's a lot of options. But let's go back to the slides so you can kind of get an idea of how that works. In this particular case, what you'd have is a developer operations, whoever, somebody goes, sets up this continuous integration deployment story, you know, to the Azure website. It literally is like a couple clicks, and you say, I want to integrate it in with GitHub or, you know, Dropbox, or we have, you know, you can use Visual Studio Online, of course, but there's a lot of options, and you can use Git or TFS to do this. Once you set that up, there's some special magic sauce that happens all behind the scenes. Effectively, you know, when somebody at this point will now check in some code, a build automatically gets created. And after that build gets created, Microsoft Azure is monitoring that for new build events. So effectively it knows, hey, oh, I noticed there's a new build there inside of Visual Studio Online. And it goes and automatically does the deployment of that application inside of into the website. So you really have, I mean, within minutes, you can have a continuous integration, continuous deployment setup. I'm not in depth with Jenkins and Hudson's and all these other open source things, and they definitely have their place, and I'm sure a lot of extremely advanced different capabilities. But I would say that this is a really easy experience for what a lot of other people have a lot of setup and configuration things to do. I mean, a few minutes, you can get this scenario enabled, even if you're not using Visual Studio Online to do those deployments. So gives you some context there. So next I want to talk about, kind of shift gears here, from talking about continuous integration, continuous deployment, to self-service environments. It's kind of a natural extension, I would say, of once you have, let's say, a scenario where you use infrastructure configuration as code, you have these deployments. To do that, you have some way for anybody inside your organization, probably developers, to go and provision this. Now, I would say this is probably something really where, especially where an ops person can come into part, especially with things like Azure Pack or even Service Manager, right? You may use System Center Service Manager, which has a front end here, to say, click a few things, I want to deploy an environment, and then back behind the scenes, you may use PowerShell with Orchestrator to provision, you know, in the same way we just showed here, particular environments. And that way, with Service Manager as an example, you have a way to wrap things around there. But at a bare minimum, right, the general concept, if we go back to the slides, is to see that, you know, somebody says, I want this environment to be created, some cog, you know, action happens behind the scenes. And ideally here, if the self-service was combined with infrastructure as code, it doesn't have to be, you would have all those environments automatically provisioned, and you're going to provide a lot of additional value, right? Because you're going to be able to very efficiently spin up, tear down resources inside of your environment, ensure those costs are saved. You're also going to have some form of process around that, right? So, you know, people aren't just going to be going, in the old days, we call it VM sprawl. Everybody just doing more and more VMs and VMs, VMs. Well, in the cloud, that's kind of an infinite problem, right? There's a point where, you know, your bill just keeps going up and up. Whereas with VM sprawl, you maybe hit the hardware limit. Having a self-service environment would kind of help with that and have some standardization. You're really going to, you know, deploy faster. You're going to ideally probably have a better time to recovery because you can quickly spin up, spin down. You know, as far as the availability of that, I mean, I guess it ties back to probably you're going to be ideally tying that with better testing and things of your code, because hopefully if you've got this great environment of continuous integration deployment, all these things behind the scenes underneath self-service environments, that's going to be useful. So let's kind of move forward with the next slide on automated provisioning. And this is going to be effectively what I'm going to kind of show you here a little bit of in a demo. So here, inside of Microsoft Azure, what we can do is use the Azure Automation Service. And at that point, the Azure Automation Service in this example can be used as, in conjunction with PowerShell, to be your deployment mechanism for your apps. Now, you could add, you know, people to have, you know, somebody has to have access, of course, to this automation service. But if they have access, it's pretty easy to click a button, as you'll see. And once you click that button, wow, I've just provisioned an environment. In this case, I use three different examples, right? If you had a website, you could use VMs and have an IIS VM and SQL VM. You could use a PaaS cloud service, or you could use an Azure website like I've shown you. But you also may use this kind of concept for the Azure automation service to do deep provisioning. So you may also say, on a certain schedule, every week, every night, at a certain time, I want to tear down all those resources that are in my environment. So those are kind of two just sample scenarios of where you might use Azure Automation for some form of self-service. So with that, I'm going to jump to my demo. Give me 1 second to get that set up. And give me a minute. Okay. All right, so if we want to snap to my demo machine now, the first thing that you're going to need to know is Azure Automation Service today, anyway, as of this recording, is in preview. So you would need to go to the preview site to sign up for that. So if you have a trial, it doesn't matter what it is. Usually I get there by going to manage your subscriptions, your directory, your account, and that will get you to the spot where you can choose preview. In your environment. Actually, it's manage your account. Sorry. I'm not going to sign in again here. But yeah, you go there. That's how you sign up for the preview features. You can sign up for the automation service. Once you have that, you would then go and, of course, create a new automation service. In this case, well, this is actually a runbook. Hold on here. So we create a new automation account. That automation account will be assigned to a specific Azure subscription as where it'll be hosted. And then as of today, you have to do it inside the East US. But once you do that, now you have, in my case, we're going to show DevOps automation here. When I click on that, there's a number of different resources that are available for you to get started, because there's no way I'm going to go into all the depths of Azure Automation Service in like 6 minutes here. But this just gives you an idea where you could find more info on that service. Okay, so let's go into runbooks here and give you a really practical example. What you can do with the automation service is import. In this case, I want to import a runbook file. What is a runbook? It's right a PowerShell script. It can be. So you know, you can import that PowerShell script, and when you're done with that import, what you're going to have is something like this. So let me go ahead and show my deploy fabricam fiber runbook. And inside that list, once this comes up, you can see that in this case, I've got, wow, this looks familiar to what we've been talking about. I can go in and edit it. We've got a rich editor. And now we've kind of got that fancy looking, you know, color of the different code. We've parametized this whole experience. And you've got a ability to go and configure and do a deployment of a particular application. Now in this case, I happen to have this template is not really, it's parameterized, but the other one is going to do the deployment of this thing. So if you look here, we've got template URI, we've got a number of different variables here that we've specified in our other runbook here, but it'll call this one to do the actual deployment of our Fabricam Fiber app. So I'll go back and I'm just going to discard the draft. And then it's now in a published state. So I'm going to go then switch over gears to our Fabricam Fiber deployment. And this one, you know, is where I would specify those variables that I want. In this case, I have my template. I have the template URI of where I've, you know, copied the Fabricam Fiber JSON template. I have also the location of my web deployment package. Again, you know, you could get more fancy here if you wanted to than this. And then I have my website name, which I've defined up here as Fabricam Fiber Auto Website. So if I go to fire this off, it's going to execute and it's going to do a deployment, right? So it's as simple, after you've set this up, you may want to change some of these variables in here, but it's as simple as hitting start. Now I have a development environment. So in this case, I could also view my job, see what's going on here with this deployment. Okay, and there's no output yet, but I'll show you history. So you can see an example of, because it is still running, it takes a little bit of time to execute. I think it's freezing up here. Okay. There we go. Let me go back to this. So we can list the jobs, all right? So there's no history on that app yet, but yesterday I did a successful execution of that. And we'll come back to the deployment. It should work here in a minute. What you can see here, right, is the output from the deployment. Let me zoom in a little bit because it's kind of hard to see. So if we look at this, right, you've got a deployment of the SQL Server, you've got a web deployment package, you've got a website name that you've deployed, the password, it's the output of that PowerShell script that's there inside of the table. So what you can also do, and this is the beauty of the Azure Automation Service, is set a schedule for that. So if I go into the schedule here, once it comes up, let's go back to, while we're waiting on that, let's go back to see if it's at least get it queued up to see when it's done deploying. Let's see if it's, yeah, not there quite yet. So we'll have to come check back. That's okay. Okay, so here we go. Kind of snapping back, so the schedule, right? We could set a schedule for when you want to do this deployment. Let's just say daily. And daily new app. So we click next. At this point, right, you can choose whatever you want. Do you want to deploy a new environment one time? Do you want to do it every hour, every day, at a certain time, get the latest build for your environment? There you've got the ability here to set a schedule for when you want your environment to be provisioned, in case you don't want to have to do it manually. So that gives you an idea of the schedule. I'll choose sure one time, choose next. So the daily new app schedule is going to be applied. And now effectively that app is going to run a one-time occurrence, but you get the idea here, right? And if we check out our jobs from earlier, see what the status of that. It's still running. Okay, so we'll come back to that. Second phase. So far, So far we've kind of shown you how you can import those PowerShell or those runbooks. You could use Azure Resource Manager templates under that hood to do your deployments of your environments. You could even link that to a schedule if you wanted. Well, the other side of the house is that's for provisioning. You also may use this to deprovision things, right? As an ops person or an organization, you want to be a good steward of your costs and your resources. So you want to have a way to, you know, make sure you don't spend more than you need to on these environments that get provisioned. So if we go back to our demo, we'll show you kind of how you can deprovision things inside of the environment. Okay, so we just noticed this did complete. So effectively, I can, again, we're kind of snapping back to the last deployment. But let me, oops, not that. Go back to browse. Resource groups. Just let it refresh again. And we should see, where is it here? Maybe I'm missing it. Okay, maybe it just takes a little bit for the console to refresh, but it should have actually done that deployment. I'm going to come back again to that in a second. Let's go back to our removal scenario again here. So let's go back. I've actually already created a remove resource PowerShell job. And if we look at the authoring of that, we can see that you have the ability to remove different groups based on a certain name. We have the ability to remove groups that are based on a certain name. So, you know, this is the beauty of Resource Manager in that, you know, if you have an app that's deployed and it has a ton of stuff associated with it, you can, in one actual command, you can do the removal. One very scary command, that's correct. So in this particular case, we've commented it out. Let me zoom into this. So in this case, we have remove Azure Resource Group name. what this script is doing is it's getting all of the resource groups that you have inside your subscription. It's saying ones that don't have default or ones that don't have this exception list name, just delete all of those. So it's a way to, you know, that you could use to clean up your subscriptions. Now, I've commented this out just so we can actually execute the script and you can see what it looks like. But effectively, right, this could be a way where you could run that on a regular basis, let's say every night at midnight or whatever. I want to run the script to remove resources that are in my subscription that are not using a standardized, you know, naming convention that people should be using to deploy stuff in the environment. So with that, I'm not going to take the time to fire this off, but I might just show you a quick execution of this job so you can kind of get the idea of this here, which is actually in the demo automated removal. Because this demo automated removal actually fires that off. And if you see in this list, in the output tab, you can see down below here that, hey, I've removed, if I were to have not commented out the actual remove, it would have removed all the resources and all the groups inside of there. So you get the kind of general idea. With that, I think we're done. We're done with our course here. We really appreciate you all attending. This course, there is some resources here that I want to make sure you're well aware of. There's a lot of other resources for operations regarding DevOps. You know, I know we haven't dived really much into all the full end-to-end DevOps thing. There's tons of stuff here in that space for you to check out. But yeah, thanks for attending and watching this course. So, good to go.
Thanks, Paul.
Oh yeah, check out the poll. There we go. Yeah, so check out the poll down below. Fill that out.
Let us know how we did.
Yeah, let us know how we did.